You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100, and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Don't Nearly View system, the oldest. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Hello there. You're watching and listening to another Scoutcast, fantasyfootballscout.co.uk. My name is Mark.
And I'm John T.
And I'm Andy.
And I'm Az.
All right.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Hello. So on the week where we time travel through three game weeks in the space of 7 days, we're back to basically pick over the wreckage with Nick in the ascent and my team in the doldrums. Sickeningly, I'm joined by a buoyant Nick, who this week has surged again to a strong-looking spot. You right, mate?
Yeah, I'm not bad, thank you. Been a busy few game weeks, which I've had some mild success on, which is a contrast to the struggles I had last year. We're recording as well during the Arsenal-West Ham game, so if you hear Tom shriek for joy at any point, which is a rare noise to hear from him in the current Arsenal situation, then you'll know what's happened. I've just seen Creswell hack down Nicolas Pepe yet again. He's got yellow carded. Just to say who we are, who got the assist, you can find us on Twitter at WGTA_PL or at WGTA_Nick. And you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, wherever you'd like to get your pods. So what are we going to be talking about this week, Thomas?
So I think this time we're going to take a slightly different tack to usual, and we're going to look at each other's squads this week and what happened over the busy period just gone. These are kind of looking at questions like, what do we see in our evaluation of each other's decisions over these last three? Because it was quite a frenzied period, wasn't it? And speaking to that frenzied period, what can we learn for the upcoming Christmas madness? Because that was like a rehearsal onslaught of game weeks, wasn't it, in some ways? And we'll also do the features, of course, the market forces and Dad Watch. I hear some rash transfers have been made, Nick, plus some questions for the community. Thanks for them.
Yeah, thanks always for the questions, guys. So if we start with the game week's reviews, I'm happy to go first so it launches us into the conversation of our theme. So yeah, it was a good week for me again, 72 points here. It started relatively poorly actually, with sort of Tomori not showing up and Mane not showing up and TAA sort of coming on for his cameo to help the team keep a clean sheet, a very rare clean sheet for him there, which also meant Isaac Hayden was going to be a key member of my team this week, getting a two-pointer. But apart from those guys, it was a really good week for the rest of the team. Madison doing the business, Captain Vardy, Rashford, new signing Dele Alli getting 9 points as well, Jimenez, all doing the business. So yeah, pretty happy with that. If we're going to talk about the last three game weeks, got 70 points the week before as well, so that's a double whammy in terms of returns. That was another good week. James Madison again getting some points for me, and Sadio Mane, of course, the 15, and Marcus Rashford, really good signing he's been for the team, getting a 13-pointer that week, and Mason Mount in his last hurrah, my team, also getting returned. Captain Vardy, 10-pointer from him, was okay. The third week wasn't as good. This is when you started to catch me up, Tom, actually, with sort of 47 points for that week, game week 14. And we were on even Stevens at the end of that week, actually, as well. You know, the likes of Sterling got 7 points, but he got beaten by De Bruyne. Trent got a 10-pointer, and Jimenez and Rashford got assists as well. But yeah, it wasn't a great week with Captain Mane only getting 4 points.
Yeah, certainly. I think we were even at that point because I got a 54 back in game week 14. My Captain Mane, that was literally just weekend before last, but that sounds like an absolute eon ago, doesn't it, in FPL terms? But anyway, I put Mane in as captain and Vardy went ahead and scored and Mane blanked against Brighton, which was very annoying. But that week I got TAA, De Bruyne and Son contributing 30 points between them. Game week 15, another bang average score, 54 to 57. So that was when you started to overtake me because you got a 70 that week. I captained Vardy for a 10. He only got the one goal, but he got yellow carded for a doubtful penalty decision, ended up 57. Wasn't that great? And this weekend just gone, another bang average score. It kind of keeps happening. So 53 this weekend. The only three players who actually performed for me were Vardy, the captain, thank God, Son and Jimenez. So on Saturday, I was really annoyed. I said on the Slack, didn't I, Nick, that Son, I wish I captained him. You know, I've missed out on differential. It feels like a missed opportunity. But actually getting the Vardy kind of captaincy right is pretty good because it means that I at least conserve my rank. But I've fallen about 100K places and over two free chances, I really take a sonic screwdriver to my team going forward. And I suppose that procession of games is what we're going to be talking about, because it's the decisions we made in those short-term kind of spaces for deciding what we're going to do next, which are coming under the microscope in this podcast. We've had a few good questions on this as well. So Andy Nash says that he's fallen from 28K to 183K. But what can he do next time? We have these fixtures chock-a-block to improve things. And Ketan asks, why can't we stop over-managing when we promise ourselves we won't? To look at how we both did in this little period, just as a, well, we don't normally do this, do we? Actually, we normally look at wider things, but just in this sort of period, but let's look at our own teams. You got 187 points over those three game weeks, a slow start and a really solid sort of midweek and end week. I got 165, just three bang average scores. You earned 22 points over me, and that's really made the difference. We were both equal on points in game week 14, but coming out of game week 16, you've got a 22 point advantage.
Got a little bit of an advantage. Quite happy with that. As I said, I remember last year, it was kind of like we had very similar teams, and I think beginning this period as well, we had very similar teams. I think there's obviously a few key decisions, and it just a couple of key players that really make the difference. And you do find that quite a bit. We're all bunched up, we're all quite templated up, but you know, it's those odd players that are in your team that perhaps you're even not really sure about why they're still there, or if they're actually going to work out for you. Because I was doubting Maddison, for instance, coming into game week 15, but you know, he really proved himself the last couple of game weeks as like a key member of the team. And you know, when he was sort of playing the Riker role in my team, because one of my errors, perhaps, and the question was about overmanagement. One of my errors was actually undermanagement to a certain extent when I burnt that transfer in game week 12, and I didn't bring in Jamie Vardy, who was clearly the form player. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to stick with Riker here. I'm going to stick with Maddison to try and do the business outside of owning Jamie Vardy. But then, of course, I got Jamie Vardy in, but I also kept Maddison, and having that Leicester attacking double ups really, really benefited my team in the last couple of game weeks. And him and Rashford, the other player that I brought in for the injured Tammy Abraham, really making that difference.
I think the Rashford buy, for example, he's second for XG over the last six. So if you watch Man United as well, he's live one of them. He's absolutely on fire. Over the last three, he's gotten you 27 points, whereas Tammy's only gotten 14 because he didn't play the first game, got 12 points in the second, and then only got two, a blank against Everton. Now, I think that's been one thing, but as you said, holding Maddie, Matthew Jones says, I've always been anti him, and perhaps that's right. I mean, Josh said, always cheating, and the lad can't shoot, and that's probably true as well. But I mean, you can't argue with the fact that you've got the 2 points on like weekend before last, and you've got a 9 and a 10, that's 21 points. Adding it all together, I bought Son in at the start for game week 14, and that's worked out well. But that also means I couldn't bring in kind of Maddie. And as you covered my differentials, it meant that I increasingly had nowhere to turn. So I think what it seems to boil down to is that I had Son and Jimmy, and they got 36 points for me. But Rashford and the guy you kind of undermanaged in as a differential, Nick, Maddison, the two of them managed to get 48 points for you. And that really worked. That and the Gazzaniga move a little while ago, 2-2 in the six, gets you 10 points versus just 2 points for Pope throughout this whole period, which is not good, is it? So it's been very fine margins. But I mean, to Ketan's question about overmanagement, in some ways, you kind of undermanaged to begin with, didn't you? And that's kind of how you've managed to get ahead of me almost, because you have Maddie in there who just ticks over nicely.
You do have undermanagement. I think we talk about a lot about overmanagement, but undermanagement can pay off. It can be negative. For instance, you know, hanging on to Raheem Sterling perhaps was a bit of a mistake of mine as well. Perhaps even I hung on to Mason Mount a little bit too long, but then he picked up a cheeky 6 points as well. So, you know, you can take lots of hits, you can sort of take lots of gambles, but sometimes, you know, you look at the players you're getting rid of and say, actually, is it really worth me selling them? Oh, was an Arsenal goal.
The Martinelli goal, I think. Yeah, yeah. Nice. Tries to get an embarrassing. Sorry, Sage. Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, I think I know that you've did a little bit of management, for instance. I think you got rid of Mount, didn't you? And you brought in Zaha, trying to follow the talisman theory. And we're not too sure if Zaha really is the talisman at Crystal Palace. But you're eyeing up those tasty Crystal Palace fixtures at the time, and perhaps you could have perhaps looked at the defence, the likes of Gaeta, as a replacement for Nick Pope as well, but you chose to stick with the man you had at the back. I know you always say just leave him, just keep the main guy all season, see what he does. No point rotating around. But we knew that Burnley were running into some really, really tricky fixtures. So you could have perhaps made a change there as well. So it often depends on the actual decision, because sometimes overmanagement can be a good thing.
That's the worry, isn't it? That sometimes you look at it and you think, oh, I could have moved Pope out a few weeks ago. And people who prioritise moving Pope out for Guaita are really rolling in it, aren't they? Like a couple of really strong performances by Guaita, I think you'd be 17 points up. Or I would be 17 points up if I'd done that on a freebie. It was just one of those. Like I brought in Chilwell alongside Son 3 weeks ago. Like Son was obviously a good transfer in. And Chilwell, I thought, you know, I was being really smart. I had, you know, he'd got the following kind of procession over the last four, 19, 6, 6 and 8. And he got two bonus points in a fairly drab game. So I thought, well, you know, he's a great buy. Why not? And he covered also kind of having a Leicester midfield like Maddison. So in some ways, I rikered that Leicester attacking player back to a defender. It's a bit of a luxury punt, I suppose, as James Quirrell also did. And yeah, the free that I had him in for, he got a blank, didn't play, another blank. Absolutely ridiculous. And it was like a huge redistribution of funds. But so where you were able to kind of go grab Rashford, I was kind of stuck with the VAJ. And as you mentioned, like Mount to Zaha midweek, I think, I don't know whether it was over management or not with him, because Zaha, the fixtures were good. He just scored 2-2. And you've got to hope that the fixtures are going to get form. Like it's hard to look back at that with hindsight and be like, that was a mistake. It's just in terms of the raw numbers, which aren't particularly great. Mount got 10 points over the last two game weeks. Zaha's got 2 clean sheets, so he's got 6. So I lost 4 points and also a free transfer, aka flexibility, through doing that swap. I've made 0.1 on Zaha, which I may cash in again this week for maybe Martial, which we'll talk about later. Do you think Zaha was over management? Because you can see what I was doing. You can see I was looking to get that kind of differential win. It's just there was maybe no form about it, as we said, and I just got a little bit excited about it because it was differential. But I mean, do you think it was over management, or would you have done it as well? I know you kept Mount, didn't you?
Yeah, I wasn't too keen on that move. Actually, I wasn't too hot on that move. I think he had got 2 goals in a row, so people were starting to say, "Oh, is Zaha the player that's coming into form?" And obviously, the fixtures were pretty amazing, but he's never really delivered on the Premier League stage, to be honest. I mean, those were his first goals of the season. He's one of those players, if you think, oh, he's trying to get into the January shop window a little bit. He's kind of had enough of Crystal Palace. He's been wanting to move for a long, long time. And that's kind of been reflected in his performances a little bit. So I wasn't overly keen on that move. You know, Mason Mount did feel like a player that was ready to leave the team. You know, I was quite keen to get rid of him myself as well. But I ended up actually keeping him for a bit longer than I wanted to, and he delivered. But I think it's partly because Chelsea had some decent fixtures as well. So in that sense, you know, perhaps it was a little bit of overmanagement, that particular move. Decent punt, but perhaps, you know, not the best pick. In hindsight, you know, Jack Grealish, for instance, Aston Villa's done really well in the last few weeks as well, hasn't he? Talismanic in the Aston Villa team right now compared to Zaha.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, flip back to our midweek bit on Talisman if you haven't listened to it. It's just a bit of a live show that me and Nick did. We're definitely worth a look, just because, I mean, Zaha at the moment isn't the Talisman, it's IU at Palace. And last year wasn't the Talisman either, it was Millie, although Zaha was obviously assisting a lot of those penalties. With Grealish, it was arguably the better move, because I just would have kind of fixed that hole for game week 18. But those 4 yellow cards are a bit annoying.
That's a brilliant goal.
That's a great finish.
Nicolas Pepe, bye, bye, bye.
He's here. He's made it. That was one of those prospects in the prospects. Like, remember the Salah one, which I was like, yeah, this guy's looking really good. Like Pepe, I was like, yeah, that guy's looking pretty good. Oh, yes, Pepe. What a finish, lad.
It's not Aubameyang assist, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, that's all right. We can live with that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So if Grealish is on four yellow cards, and like with the two free transfers, Zaha would have been the easy way to enable Rashford, like removing him for Grealish. But I kind of just don't think I'm going to do that now. Like Grealish with four yellow cards, it's a tough one because I kind of want him. As you mentioned, he's a talisman. And he's in the middle of everything, isn't he? He scored this week, the consolation against Leicester. So at 6.0, he'd be really, really useful. It's just those four yellow cards. I just can't do it because I'm looking at it and thinking, well, if he gets yellow card against Sheffield United, I've bought him in for that liver blank game. So yeah, it's all tribulations to try to fit in Rashford. And I'm kind of jealous that the difference between us has been that when Tammy got injured in the Champions League, I stayed put. And you took the risk, didn't you, and moved on to Rashford. And that really has been what's fueled your rise above me, really.
Yeah, and you'd also broken the Austin rule, Tom, if you remember. So you'd made your two free transfers prior to that Champions League game, which meant that if you were to sell Tammy at that particular moment in time, it would have been a minus four. And I think that was part of your decision to keep him and to take the chance. And even though that it was likely that he was going to be ruled out that next game, you decided it wasn't worth the minus four because it was going to be a potentially short-term injury that we'd recover very quickly from. So I think that's a bit of a punishment because obviously I know you were thinking also that if you didn't do that minus four, you might have brought in Danny Ings and his glass ankles, as everyone likes to say, played every single game and has got triple nines for the last three game weeks, which is a
Remind me, it's so annoying.
Yeah, I considered Ings as well because I could afford Rashford, but I still was thinking about, oh, maybe I should, you know, just get Ings and use that extra money elsewhere. You know, what put me off was the fact that there's like so many game weeks, and you know, last time I owned Danny Ings, he was that sort of 57 minute man. He would get 45 minutes, 57 minutes, one pointers, and I had to swiftly sell last season. So, well played to those guys that brought him in. And the Aubameyang's made it free, Tom, if you're watching.
Yeah, I was muted myself while I roared then. Oh, out of jail. All right. Pepe has members of my zombie team, actually. He's quite good as well. Oh, it was getting really embarrassing. Again, really, really sorry about that, Sidge. But yeah, Rashford, Nick, what about him made you think he was worth bringing in for Tammy?
Well, yeah, I mean, I was looking at Marcus Rashford, and he was hitting quite a rich vein of form before I'd even brought him in. He had four goals and two assists in the last five games, and yeah, like I said, you know, Manchester United seemed like a team at that particular moment bereft of attacking returns. You know, last season's talisman was Pogba. Martial was injured at the time. Obviously, they didn't have Sanchez and Lukaku. I talked about it a little bit on the Talisman Theory pod. You know, I wasn't sure about Marcus Rashford, but, you know, he fit the bill as kind of like a leading man at Manchester United. The fixtures were all right. I think, you know, I was actually eyeing up really that Aston Villa game. The home match, I thought that was a plum match. And when he didn't get a goal in that one, I was a bit disappointed with the transfer. I thought this one's not worked out. But 13 points against Spurs, 9 points against Manchester City. Yeah, seems like a Time Lord type decision there to get him in. Definitely happy to have Rashford now for the upcoming fixtures. They've got Everton, Watford, Newcastle, Burnley up next because he does look nailed on in that Manchester United attack. And they look really good. That was like the best I've seen them since sort of almost the Ferguson era against Manchester City at the weekend. I was really, really impressed with their attacking play. You know, gone are the days of park the bus. Perhaps that's coming to Spurs. I don't know. Maybe not after that sort of 5-0 thrashing at Burnley. But I thought United played really well. And Rashford was that man that was making all of those attacks happen alongside Martial and Dan James, of course.
Yeah, things are definitely improving at United, aren't they? So over the last five game weeks, they've had 50 shots in the box. The five game weeks preceding that, they only had 32. So they're definitely amping upwards. And I think part of that is Martial's return to the team and Rashford being able to inhabit a left-hand side that he seems to really like. Maybe next year we'll see him as a midfielder in FPL. That'd be amazing, won't it? Although he might be one of those expensive ones if he keeps this up. Spoke about him and Tasman theory, but Rashford is just absolutely nailing it for Man United at the moment, as Aubameyang, who, as we mentioned a second ago, has just scored for Arsenal, is doing the same job. But I guess going forward as well, as you just mentioned, it's good to have him, and I'm in two minds minds about him, because I'm kind of wondering whether the last two games, you know, the City, it was Spurs, those two games suited Rashford and suited United's counter-attacking play. But is the creativity there for Rashford to be able to nail it against the sort of teams which are coming up? I want to cover it. I just don't know whether it's worth -4, whether it's worth selling Jimenez for. Like, it seems a bit much, doesn't it? Like, those are the moves that I'm kind of considering. But we'll talk about them later on. I guess the final thing here is, for Christmas, are you going to take anything from that? Because it has been quite a frantic period and the fortunes really have changed.
I'd like to think that it wasn't all luck, that there's a little bit of skill involved, but, you know, not all decisions pay off. We can talk about all my historical bad moves as well. I made the right decisions, brought in the right players at the right time, and hung on to the right players at the right time. I think, you know, over the Christmas period, it's going to be another period of quite a lot of fixture congestion. So there's going to be a few moves where I might take some transfers. I think for now I'm probably going to roll my transfer again, allow myself 2 free transfers for the following game week and over the Christmas period, and yeah, we'll see what happens.
It was definitely my fault, I think, for just seeing that door close on Zaha. The fact was that there was another player there in Grealish I could have got, and that would have not snookered me. I don't know, I'm not questioning it too much. I think that his subsequent sort of outcome hasn't been particularly good, but I haven't got a TARDIS. And I still think it's true that if a talisman does emerge, it's worth buying them. Like, there was an opportunity for me to move from, as you mentioned, Tammy to Ings, and I'd currently be 13 points up if I'd moved to Ings, despite the fact he was a bit of a glass man for a short-term punt, you know? You know, I should have resisted the urge to make that midweek transfer. I could have done more this game week rather than just leaving it. Like, maybe I could have looked at Rashford as well. As it is, I'm in two minds now. I'm in an awkward point, because if I want to sell somebody to get Rashford, it's got to be Jimenez, whereas you've already solved that problem. You solved it a little while ago with Abraham out. So now I'm looking at it and thinking, oh, maybe it's Martial, but... Yeah, no, I agree with what you're saying. I think it's definitely true that it's hard to kind of take too much from it. I just think that maybe resisting that urge to make that transfer, if you can bank it, despite the prices, is probably a good thing. Just because I'm a little bit annoyed that I did do that Zaha move. I should have left it a little bit longer just to see. And that maybe would have meant I also had Kelly this week as well. So, yeah, quite a tough few rounds, I suppose. But think about over the last kind of few games, how small the space was in the sliding doors and how things could have turned out so differently or not turned out as well as they have, depending on your point of view. All right, let's take a break there, move on to the features.
Who got the assist?
So we're back and it's time to go for our features now. Just three for you this week: the market forces, the over 30s and Dab Watch. Let's start with the market forces then. You're the man across numbers, Nick. What's going on?
So yeah, it's actually Marcus Rashford, the aforementioned Marcus Rashford, that's top of the market forces right now with over 200,000 transfers in, really starting to attract the attention of managers, what with his rich vein of form that he's currently in. He's now up to 10 goals, which is matching his record from last season. So he looks well set to break his sort of Premier League scoring record, as he really has that sort of, you know, breakthrough for season that I guess we've all been waiting for from him. So definitely seeming to break that template, that Vag is becoming more of a VAR, isn't it, now? So Rashford really starting to attract the attention of managers. The player's being sold, actually. It's to Manchester City, Duran. I think we got some questions about Manchester City a little bit later on in the pod, but it's both De Bruyne and Sterling that are being sold. It's not just Sterling, who's been on a really poor run of form now. He's only got one goal in sort of 6 games, which is quite unlike him. So Sterling has had over 100,000 transfers out, but De Bruyne as well, he's also getting the sales now. People deciding that he's not worth holding either after a couple of blanks for the Belgian international. But you know, they do have a couple of tough fixtures, Arsenal and Leicester up next. So 120,000 managers have sold him, but you know, perhaps a few people looking at some other midfielders, specifically the Spurs players. So it's not just your man Son who scored an absolute worldie of a goal at the weekend.
No, it was so good, wasn't it? The solo goal, my lord. As Shearer said, just suspend the goal of the season now. It was brilliant. The South Korean commentary was sublime, absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was a brilliant goal. Son's had 180,000 transfers in, and also Dele Alli, who I brought in for his 9-pointer, 100,000 transfers in. Ali, of course, attracting a lot of attention with his brilliant runner form as well, with sort of 3 goals, 3 assists in the last 4. Mourinho really seems to have had a brilliant impact on that Spurs attack, with Harry Kane as well also picking up a brace.
Yeah, certainly. And I think that De Bruyne and Sterling are paying the price, aren't they, for those players emerging. And I think rightly so. That after a 5-0, the Man United game was a bit of a blip, and as you said afterwards, they were a bit arrogant. And I think that apart from that moment of magic from him, there wasn't very much in that game. But outside of that, I mean, there have been a lot of goals scored for the Spurs. They've scored 13 goals in four games. And I think it's absolutely right. Like, Son's up to 10.0 now, rose overnight. So I can see why people are selling De Bruyne, and definitely I can see why people are taking the opportunity to exterminate Sterling from their sides. Elsewhere, Jimenez being sold still in midweek. He was a surprise kind of highest sold player. This week again, he's been sold 102,000. Vardy still being bought, Nick. Incredibly, people still haven't got that guy. 76,000 people have got him in. Aubameyang paying the price too. And finally, Pulisic. He's really not done very well, has he? And people are kind of thinking, well, it's time to delete and bring in other players. It looks like the runaway new budget hero, Martin Kelly. He's been bought by a lot of people, hasn't he, Nick?
Yeah, Martin Kelly, he's been bought by 100,000 managers. People looking at that rich vein of form Crystal Palace are in, at least defensively. Three clean sheets now in a row. 6.8 points for Martin Kelly over those. A little bit frustrating for yourself, Tom, having played the Lord John Lundstrom, who seems to be the former 4.0 million hero right now. What with Martin Kelly doing the business, Rico also having done the business a little bit earlier. He's attracting a lot of managers' attentions, probably just because of his bargain price, really.
Yeah, definitely. Very, very annoying this week. I didn't want to go into it earlier, but put Cantwell first and Kelly second on the bench. I'd spoken to audit before and said, I'm going to put Kelly first. And I just forgot to change it, basically. It was really annoying. I can see why he's being bought, and yeah, he's a really, really vital individual to have. I mean, I've got Lundstrom, Rico and Kelly in my team at the moment. Like, imagine if you started with those three 4.0 players, like the amount of value you'd have in your team. Woe betide those people who were flogging big at the back at the start of the season. Don't know who they were. Right, let's move on to the over 30s then. Speaking of
Cybermen, wasn't it, Tom?
Yeah, definitely. People. Yeah, definitely not us. Right, let's move on to over 30s then. This is our team of players who are 30 and above to celebrate the milestone Nick and I have hit. This week it's 58 for them. Captain Vardy and Aubameyang up front. Aubameyang still playing, of course. Could get a couple of bonuses as well to push him into 60 plus. In midfield, nothing happened. Willian, Ozil still playing right now. He came in this week. David Silva, Moutinho and MacArthur not doing very much. Moutinho, he returned in four games in four, I think, before this point. At the back, Johnny Evans with the goal. Basham, very, very lucky because he was sent off and his red card was the first red card ever to be overturned by VAR in the Premier League. On the bench, though, Cahill with an 8 and Cathcart with a 5. So quite a lot of points bench with over 30s, but they're doing pretty well, actually. They're due to get to the top million after this game week. It's been quite a good one for them, and long may it continue. But running out of transfers to make, Nick, with Aguero out, there's not that many strikers. McGoldrick in the team at the moment, the non-goal scoring forwards. Like, I don't really know where we go. I'm looking at that wild card and I just don't know what we're going to do with it, because there's only a finite amount of players who have hit that age bracket, so maybe we'll burn the wild card the over 30s. I think it may be a bit restrictive, really.
Yeah, I'm not really sure who you could bring in on a wild card, to be honest. You know, the likes of Glenn Murray showed up from a one-pointer, didn't he, at the weekend. But him and, you know, also players like James Milner aren't even playing. So I don't know if you got Ozil. He's decided to make an appearance.
Yeah, I got him in this week.
A dodgy missed header earlier. Looked like me playing FIFA off the back of one of your corners there, Tom. Just,
I always hit the corner flag. It's great clearance from the assistant manager.
talking about over 30s.
Segue.
Time for dad watch, or, you know, over 50s, really. It was all right week with him as well. He's not, you know, been tearing up trees recently, unfortunately. And we're the first to admit that. But, you know, he's still up there in the top 100K. Pretty decent. Just the 55 points for him this particular game week. Or 56, actually, because he's going to have Rico come off the bench from Mane for this one-pointer. But yeah, it's still just auto-captain on Vardy for 26 points. A bit like your team, really. Vardy and Son basically making up the entire sort of point selection. And James Maddison also getting a 9. But, you know, likes of Pope got 0 in goal, and Dunk got 0 as well. Unfortunately for him, he's made a couple of early moves. Richarlison and Johnny Evans has come in for him, so he's brought in some big hitters and gone for the Everton talisman, someone that's perhaps on your radar as well. I'm going for Johnny Evans, who, you know, he's following true to his theory in terms of bringing in the players with the most points, because Johnny Evans is their highest scoring defender now with 75 points. He's really sort of flying under the radar, what with all the rest of the Leicester success. And actually, Evans has like more points than the likes of Mason Mount and Roberto Firmino, which is quite ridiculous, really. There's a rumour that he might be making an appearance on the 13th as well. We'll have to see.
What's his rank at the moment? Is he going in there proud?
I think he'll be going in there proud. I mean, his rank at the moment is 56k, so yeah, pretty decent.
Yeah, doing very well. A position that many of us managers would kill for. All right, let's take a break, Venick, and move on to the questions.
Who got the assist?
So we're back and it's time to catch up with the Who Got the Assist mini league. We can't really do a proper update just because of all the sort of auto subs, the Arsenal game going on, and, you know, a few VAR devices that might have captained Mane that we might have missed. Apologies if we have missed you, but there has been a lot of change at the top of the table. And it's actually become really congested, which makes it really hard to actually see who's top at the moment. But just a quick shout out to Abdul Islam. Looks like he's got a 70-pointer, overall rank 162nd at the moment, which is pretty damn fantastic. And Luke Burgess as well, really rising to the top. 84 points at time of recording. Bench Saha, interestingly, Tom, so I didn't follow you there.
Wish I'd done that.
Game week rank of 65k, 164th overall rank at time of recording. So yeah, and really lots of people doing really well actually in the mini league. I don't know if they've been listening to our advice, probably not, but yeah, well done all the guys who are right at the top of the Who Got the Assist mini league, because quite a lot of them seem to be in the top sort of 1,000 as well.
Absolutely smashing it. And plus, you know, likely to be the majority of page one have hit 1,000 points before the halfway mark, which is pretty damn good. So well done, everybody. All right. This week, there's a couple of things to mention. First is that I'm lending out my vocal talents to another podcast yet again after last week's appearance on the Hub podcast. This time around, we're reciprocating the favour after Luke Jurdy came on the pod a few weeks ago. I'll be doing that with Luke and Rich Wolfenden tomorrow, so that one will be out soon. Find them if you want to hear me there and listen to them too, at Triple Captain Free. Also, this Friday is the Who Got the Assist / Fantasy Football Hub Christmas party for this year, Friday the 13th of December. That's in the Marylebone Sports Bar and Grill from 6 p.m. onwards. Expecting to get a mega turnout. Really, really cool to hear where people are coming from, you know, from Northern Ireland to Oman, people flying in. Our friend Kun Karam Tires is flying in from Netherlands. The likes of FPL General have kindly RSVP'd yes as well, so it should be an excellent night. So if you can, cash those brownie points, clear those diaries, block your calendars, and definitely try to make it. The Marylebone Sports Bar and Grill from 6 p.m. Both very excited about that and should be an absolutely fantastic night. All right, let's move on to the questions then, Nick. A few things to talk about this week. The first one is Magnus Carlsen. Yeah, he's all over the news at the moment because in the world, he's gotten up to number 6. His charge, his relentless charge forward is absolutely crazy, isn't it? He's done really, really well. Those fish tacos on a Friday night, they seem to eat in Scandinavia, really doing wonders for him. And the first question is from FBR Yogi, who asks, are we being done over by Magnus Carlsen? Should he be given the advice? Because he's been doing absolutely fantastically, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think so. He just seems to be operating in a different time and space to the rest of us, just a completely different level. You know, God knows how he's doing it, but, you know, we are talking about a chess champion here. We're talking about, you know, an absolute genius, which kind of proves one thing which we often talk about is how much luck is actually involved in FPL, because we're always bemoaning about luck, aren't we? Saying, you know, things didn't work out my way, these transfers were really unlucky, this happened, it was all luck, no skill involved at all. But, you know, when you see like the likes of Magnus Carlsen, he's clearly sort of, you know, like in chess, he's clearly thinking sort of 5 transfers ahead or 5 moves ahead in terms of what he's doing, the shape of his team. For instance, he's managed to line up with sort of a double Liverpool, double Spurs pivot in midfield, which I just thought was absolute genius, the way he's sort of fitted in Son, Abbey, Salah and Mane in his teams. And though he's actually been a little bit unlucky in terms of Salah and Mane and a little bit of rotation there, it's really seemed to be quite effective. And it's obviously, I reckon there's probably been quite a bit of forward planning in terms of making those kinds of decisions and those kinds of moves. So, you know, he's not the kind of person perhaps to give away his advice, because he's got his own tricks to the trade and he beat the rest of us whilst doing, you know, relatively okay, but not, you know, we're not turning up any trees like Magnus is. So maybe Magnus should do his own podcast
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Neil Murray, another resident of Scandinavia, said on the preseason podcast, didn't he? He highlighted the moment last year when everybody else was on one captain and Magnus went another way. And definitely saw that midweek, game week 15, everybody was on Vardy for Watford. I think the effective ownership was almost 180%. So basically everyone who owned him captained him and then some in the top 100K. But he went for captain Salah and vice Mane. Against Everton, of course, Salah didn't play, so the vice went to Mane and he got 30 points, a 78-point game week. And that really pinged him up above people. So those high-stake gambles at points when there is a seemingly obvious captaincy, deviating from the herd and going with that alternative, definitely seems to have paid off for him. And definitely see what he's doing. He said in an interview that it was a lot about luck, but a few of his friends have said that he's absolutely obsessed with FPL, which is absolutely awesome. It'd be really interesting to hear his thoughts. Hopefully he'll tell us more. If you're listening, Magnus, definitely get in touch. We'll have you on the podcast anytime. Right, moving on. Midfielders, Nick. It's all the rage at the moment because lots of people are looking, as you mentioned, at the market forces at Son Ali. And a few people are wondering how the hell we do that, which players they're going to bring in, who they're going to shunt. There's also a Liverpool blank coming up. Game Week 18, Liverpool and West Ham have a blank. So Mitchell Sterling says he's thinking of selling Mane on Game Week 18, but there's a lot of people looking at another man, Kevin De Bruyne, and thinking, is it time to move him on? So FPL Frank, Hefty Horse, Paul Pryor, FPL Hype and Zod ask, is it time to just get rid of City, mostly Kevin De Bruyne? Is it time to just kind of divest of City and just kind of go with other options? I mean, Nick, let's focus on City, because I'm guessing we're both keeping Mane, aren't we?
I think so, yeah. At the moment, yeah. I will be keeping Mane. I think it often depends on how much money you've got tied up with a player. I think I've got probably about 0.5 million worth of price rises out of the guy. I don't really want to sell him. I know it's going to be a little bit of a challenge. It's definitely going to be a week where your bench is going to be very important. If you have Mane, if you also have Trent, I mean, a lot of people are tripled up. And I think if you are tripled up on Liverpool, you do have to really consider selling one of them just to give yourself that extra flex for the liver blank. But yeah, with Mane, he's definitely staying in my team.
Well, I've got so much tied up in that guy. I probably handle it for 1 week and there's going to be a relentless, remorseless focus on the title, isn't there? But I suppose you could be looking at Kevin De Bruyne and thinking he might be one you can get rid of, one you can move on. I mean, there's a lot of people obviously asked about him, Nick. What do you think about him? Is he a player who's expendable to you, or do you think that he's one that you're going to keep hold of?
He does seem to be yo-yoing out of my team a little bit. I've only just put back in.
This year's hazard, isn't he?
Yeah. He is this year's hazard because he's actually just come back in for me. So I sold Sterling for De Bruyne, and then I used that money to upgrade Mount to Ali. But it'd be a bit crazy for me to sell him again. And with Manchester City, they have had some pretty challenging fixtures, and you know, they've still got quite a few coming up. I mean, you know, Arsenal up next, I suppose you could call it a challenging fixture, maybe not in the current climate, but after that it's Leicester and then it's Wolves, and you know, Sheffield United as well, a team that have proved themselves quite strong defensively this season. So I think you know, there is definitely cause for selling De Bruyne and, you know, going for some sort of Spurs double up in midfield after that fantastic performance by Tottenham against Burnley. But, you know, De Bruyne is one of the sort of star players, I guess, of the season. He has seemed a little bit out of form alongside the rest of the Manchester City attack just in the last couple of game weeks. But, you know, I wouldn't write him off yet. You know, he's still sort of, in terms of the underlying stats, he's still right up there. He's created 46 chances, for instance, which is 15 more than any other midfielder. 12 big chances created. He's got 9 assists, which is more than twice any other midfielder. So, you know, he's in our teams for a reason. That's because of his, you know, amazing stats that he's generated. And, you know, it's not just assists with De Bruyne as well. You know, he's got a few goals as well. 3 goals and 30 goal attempts, which is in the top 10 for midfielders. So I think for me, you know, he's quite expensive now, 10.2 million. But we're still talking about Manchester City, and they've been absolutely brilliant for the last few seasons. So I'll certainly not write them off at this stage. And you know, he's probably not going to go straight away for me. I don't know what you're thinking. Are you keeping De Bruyne in your team?
Yeah, well, I bought him a 9.5, so I don't think he's going anywhere for me. I think for you, there's maybe more because, you know, you're not losing anything on him almost. So there might be a cause to remove him a bit more than me. You mentioned the fixtures are good. It's still Man City. The underlying stats are still good. So he's had more key passes, according to Fantasy Football Hub, over the last four game weeks than any other player. And also created the second most big chances. Son has actually created the most big chances over the last few, which is quite crazy, actually, considering who he is. He's got the highest XA as well, 3.17, which is quite a lot. But yeah, De Bruyne, for me, I got him at 9.5. He definitely feels like it's going to be a big decision to sell him. I feel like I really need to be convinced that it's time to talk about Kevin. And for me, it's just a case of just leaving him in there for now and seeing kind of how they do, because inevitably the fixture is going to be better. There's no kind of European distractions very, very soon for Man City. So I'm kind of thinking, well, if I'm the doctor and I'm looking at it, I don't think that he is the place in my team I'm looking to fix. I don't know. I think that De Bruyne is staying around for me for the time being. And I mean, it is very tempting to jump off Man City and think, well, the focus is going to completely be on the Champions League now the title's gone. But it's also not true to say that Man City won't be scoring, won't be getting points in the Premier League. Like, they're not going to give up altogether, despite the fact they've got a rickety defence and an attack which was looking a bit cowed against United, a bit out of ideas. But you know, the fixtures, as Nick just says, are to come. I think it's just not time to be subbing out on De Bruyne for now. I've got Son alongside him. I've got Mane alongside him. Still got Zaha. And I'm also looking at Cantwell as well, maybe staying. I'm not too sure yet. So you can fit in quite a decent kind of layer of players around De Bruyne. I think really it does depend on whether you have him for 9.5 or if you've got him for 10.2. So you've got him for 10.2. You can be removing him, can't you, Nick?
Yeah, exactly. I think having that extra flex is useful. But yeah, I think it is a bit of a dangerous move when you think about selling a player which you know you're going to have to buy back at some point potentially, but you're essentially writing off sort of 0.3 million of your transfer value. So there is a little bit of risk involved in that kind of move. But so yeah, going back to Mitchell's question on Mane about do we keep Mane and other Liverpool players for the blank, I think it is a case that I'm going to hold the Liverpool players. But if you do have three, sell one. But the likes of Trent, I think my dad's actually got rid of Trent, but the likes of Trent and Mane, I think they're probably going to stay in my team, and I'm just going to have to rely on a few of the you know, extras in your team. And it's not a season, as we've discussed, it's not a season where we've got a player that's not playing at all in our teams just because of the beauty of some of these 4.0 million defenders that can step in, for instance. You know, it's the perfect week, for instance, for Martin Kelly to actually get some game time in your team, for instance, in the absence of Trent, and when he's playing Newcastle, and he could be easily another clean sheet. You know, Sheffield United, Lundstrom has Brighton, Bournemouth's got Burnley at home, so you know you could be looking at a lineup of Rico and Lundstrom and Kelly all playing for you, Tom, for instance, and not having two bad fixtures even. You know, potentially you're keeping clean sheets, so you know I think you can get away with benching the likes of Trent or Robertson or benching the likes of Mane and Salah. Just for that 1 week, and you want, as I've said before, you want them straight back in your team anyway because they're Liverpool, and you know they're absolutely dominating in the Premier League this season, and you know they'll have a great fixture run after that and a potential double game week as well coming up after that soon. So I think for me they're just going to have to stay there on the bench, and I'll get through that week with using some of the extra players in my squad.
Yeah, same here. I've got Rico in now. I brought him in yesterday because Chilwell was dropping and just thought I wanted the cheapest possible defender. So Rico will play in the Liver Blank. I know what you mean about Liverpool. And the good thing is as well is that they're going to be red flagged. So any kind of price movement is going to be frozen for a little while and then be unfrozen as well when they're unflagged. So you're all good really in terms of conserving the price of those. If you're like me and you've brought in TAA at 7.0, he's the one player who's been in my squad since game week one. And if you brought him and you brought Mane in kind of close to the starting price, when you may have got him in about 11.8, 11.7. Is it really worth selling them, bringing them back? That's a lot of money to try to make up. It's the same as people who sold Tammy are trying to make up now. So really, I think it's worth holding them and just kind of relying on your greater squad. We've been blessed with that this year, whereas in the kind of previous years, we were looking at a load of dub players coming in. I mean, the worst player on your team, Nick, is looking at Hayden that week, and probably for me, you know, looking like someone like Cantwell. So, I mean, it's bad, but it's not terrible. You haven't got that many of those sort of players because, like, Lindstrom, Rico and Kelly are such 4.0 heroes. Now, obviously, a lot more expensive, but I think you'll be able to do the job.
Yeah, exactly. I don't even think I need to play Hayden, Tom. I think he can still remain on the bench. So, yeah, for sure. I think it's definitely one of those seasons where there's a plenty of flexibility in terms of the squad. And, you know, it's a good week to use all those 15 men. Because I know a lot of people have been bemoaning the bench points this season, haven't they? Benching Cantwell points, benching Kelly points. I've complained many times about benching Rico's points. But it's a good game week to give them all time in the team, see what they can do. And inevitably, they're all blank. Next question is about Jack Grealish, who we mentioned briefly earlier as well. Hobbs and Triple Nutmeg have asked us, is it worth buying Jack Grealish despite the four yellow cards? We've discussed this a little bit on WhatsApp as well, haven't we, Tom? The fact that you could have brought in Grealish this week, but you didn't really want to because it'd be horrendous if he did get that fifth yellow card. And that's actually absent for that Liverblank game because that would completely defeat your strategy there.
With Grealish, the issue is, of course, that he's on four yellow cards. So he would be a nice way for me to get to Rashford, a nice way to move off Zaha, who the patience is quite low with him. I'm aware he's only had 30 minutes with 11 men at home, so maybe he will stay for another week. But with Grealish, there's a lot of people, obviously, who were looking at him thinking, oh, he'd be a great enabler. And by the four yellow cards, I'm one of them. And it would be devastating, as you mentioned, to bring him in for the Sheffield United game, for him to get a yellow card and for him to miss the favourable game with KC in fixture. But Nick, I guess something in his favour to bring in, if he feels a critical part of your transfers, is the story of Diego da Silva Costa, otherwise known as Diego Costa when he was at Chelsea. There was that time a few years ago when he was on four yellow cards in game week 7. And you and I both owned him, so we're both kind of quite happy, expecting it to come, etc., etc. And those people who are looking at him, he was like, I think he was the key, apart from Kane, a second striker at that point. Those people just didn't look at him because it was on four yellow cards. Between game week 7 and 17 that year, when he got his fifth yellow card, he went on to accrue a massive 81 points. So those who missed out on that, due to the fact that he had four yellow cards, missed out on a lot of points that it was difficult for them to make up. It's not the case that you can say that Grealish is Diego Costa, but it's just a cautionary tale, I suppose, and how you can overlook a player because of disciplinary. And maybe with Grealish, there's a case to bring him in regardless because there are lots of good fixtures for them around Christmas, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think especially with sort of Diego Costa, everyone's like, oh, he's a live wire. He's going to get sent off any minute. He's going to get that fifth yellow card very, very easily. And he actually showed incredible discipline during that period, much to the frustration of the managers that were not bringing him in, waiting for that yellow card to happen. And you look at that and you know that players definitely do know about that. You know, the fifth yellow card is why you rarely see a player get a second yellow as well. It'll be in the back of Jack Grealish's mind. He's not a defender. He doesn't need to make too many aggressive tackles. So, you know, I'd be very surprised if he has a moment of ill discipline in the next couple of game weeks and gets that fifth yellow card. I think, you know, Dean Smith saying don't jump in on tackles, you know, you're far too key. And he'll be definitely following that advice. But so I think, you know, obviously he's going to get yellow carded out next game week, but I think, you know, Grealish, I do think he's a really good pick, perhaps the best pick out there in terms of that sort of fourth midfielder, fifth midfielder slot. You know, the underlying stats are brilliant as well. He's creating lots of chances for Aston Villa, second only to Kevin De Bruyne in terms of the chance created stats this season. So yeah, I think Jack Grealish really starting to prove himself as Premier League quality this season, and is worth considering, especially if it enables you to get in the likes of Rashford up front.
Yeah, certainly. Definitely showing talisman appeal, isn't he? With Wesley misfiring up front. Shut up, Wesley. Right, moving forward then, the Jota Junta is the next question. So Jeremy Lewis asks, does Jota become someone we start to monitor closely? Because he was so good in the second half of last season. Those like myself who brought him in at the start of the season will be a little bit miffed at his name coming up again. But he definitely seems to be a reform player. The two goals he scored against Brighton are very well taken. Has he turned the corner for the year? He's asking because, you know, Jimenez over the last couple of games, he's seen lots of sales. He's dropped 0.2, I think it is, in price over the last few game weeks. So it's time to look at Jota, or, you know, with that third striker slot, should we be looking at pouring money in or taking money out?
I know he's just sort of scored a brace, but yeah, I still think Jimenez is the main man you're going to want in that Wolves front line. And, you know, It was Jota that got his returns, but they've been a long time coming. You know, he's been a serial blanket really this season, hasn't he? He's never really delivered on sort of the Premier League stage.
A massive blanker in my team.
Yeah, he's been a massive blanker, and it's been a bit of a struggle for him really. And he's one of the players that always seems to get hooked as well around the 70-minute mark. I'm still not too sure about him as an FPL asset. He's cheap. He's relatively cheap. He's quite good at sort of 6.1 million. But, you know, why would you want Jota if you can get sort of Danny Ings at that same price, I think, to be honest. So, you know, I'm not sold on him. I'd probably say if you've got sort of that 6.1 million-ish in the bank, you know, see if you can stretch it to the likes of Danny Ings at 6.3. Now, I think that's my opinion on Jota. I think Jimenez is the one you want in that front line.
With the Rashford sort of argument, Wolves are about to come up against some pretty difficult fixtures. You know, coming up, they've got Tottenham at home, Man City at home, and Liverpool away in the next four. Admittedly, 2021-23 after New Year, Watford, Newcastle, and Southampton are good games. But Wolves are looking like one of those teams at the moment which aren't going to score very much. It looks like the ceiling is fairly low for their players. I may be talking myself into it because I'm looking at potentially selling Jimenez. It's just that game week 18 against Norwich. It's obviously a big factor in keeping him. So I just don't know really at the moment. But I definitely wouldn't be looking at Jota for them, that's for sure. If you're looking at third strikers at the moment, there's a lot of value in the premium strikers. Vardy, Abraham, Jimenez, Rashford. There's lots of players kind of floating around. At the moment, I'd be looking to invest more rather than less in the strikers. I just don't see where the money would go right now, especially with Liverpool coming into the blank. Like, you're not going to be using them for a lot of your cash allocation. So it's just not worth it, I don't think. I think, yeah, it's not really time to look at Jota right now. Could be a nice little differential if you really need the money elsewhere. But for me, I agree with you. Still best to go with the talisman Jimenez. But the overall points yield is looking like it's going to be lower than we expected, I think. I really wish I had Rashford at this point. I really wish I had Rashford at this point. I really wish I had Rashford at this point. But I just...
Release Rashford.
Yeah. Rashford has risen quite a few points in Wally. But really, like, I just don't know. I just don't know. I'm still deliberating on Jimenez. I just think he's the one to keep, I think, for Wolves, especially if I've got him at 7.1. And the next question, Nick, I guess the final question this week is the unchallenged papacy. So we're talking Avignon, we're talking about two popes, but actually what we're talking about is the Burnley goalkeeper. Jimmy McInchese and Odera Martin ask us questions involving the goalkeeper. So Guaita has outscored Pope massively over the last few game weeks. Those people keeping Pope, like myself, how do we feel? Should we be more open to goalkeeper substitutions and goalkeeper transfers? Because it's something that I've persistently said. It's not a fire. I'm not going to look at it. But the point remains that if I'd have swapped Pope for Guaita, I'd be double digits ahead of where I am right now. So, yeah, maybe it was a time to take the opportunity to move a keeper and I missed it, Nick.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's certainly a few weeping angels that have missed out on those Pope transfers out. And I think I've said to you at the time that you should consider selling Pope with one of your transfers, and you dismissed my advice saying you weren't going to be touching.
I didn't dismiss it. I sneered.
You read it. You sneered at the advice, which would have actually paid off in the end. So I think you do have to consider goalkeeper transfers, you know, for instance. I have been thinking about getting rid of Gazza, but he finally got me a very rare Spurs clean sheet, but he was on the chopping block a little bit, and I was thinking about getting rid of him. So, you know, I think you do have to weigh it up. I think it's unfortunate Gaitar was actually here in 5 million at the start of the season, perhaps overpriced slightly at the time, which has meant that a lot of us have missed out on his returns, because Crystal Palace have done very well recently, and he's I think they've got 3 clean sheets in a row, haven't they? So, and Guitar's not just picked up clean sheets, but he's picked up save points. So he's picked up 26 points in those 3 game weeks, which is pretty damn impressive. And so I think, yeah, definitely you do need to consider goalkeeper transfers every so often. I think it's not really always the pressing priority. I appreciate that. There's always something else that perhaps, you know, you're looking at your star players and switching them around most of the time. But I think you can track the goalkeepers as well. And we knew that Nick Pope had some really tough fixtures coming up. And Manchester City and Spurs, 1 point between those 2 games, and only 1 pointer against Crystal Palace as well. The Burnley defence has dropped a little bit in form after those sort of two back-to-back clean sheets before that. You do need to consider the occasional swapperoo in the goalkeeper position.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the issue probably is that through the benefit of hindsight, we can see that Guaita was the man to bring in. But I think 3 weeks ago, there was definitely a choice between him and Dean Henderson. I know a lot of people did bring in Denders and went with a double up Sheffield United. I mean, somebody on the Fantasy Football Hub podcast may have advised that it was a good sword to bring them both in. Again, no idea who that was. But the reality is that, you know, if you'd brought in Henderson, you wouldn't really have made very much on Pope. There was a 3-pointer, 1-pointer, and a 3-pointer over the last three game weeks. So just 7 points. I mean, the difference in him and Pope was obviously still 5 points. But, I mean, 5 points versus one transfer. I don't know, Nick. I don't know if it was worth it. I think it's one of those things where, you know, Pope has now got three fairly good games that he can keep a clean sheet in Newcastle at home, Bournemouth away, Everton away. And it might just be the case that I just keep hold of him, to be honest, just because I've got other things I want to deal with still, to your point. So, yeah, it is tough. Sometimes it's nice, you know, as Guaita buyers saw, to be able to project what's going to happen. And if you get on the right side of that, the clean sheets are kept, then, you know, you're rolling in the points. But as people who looked at Sheffield United and thought, well, Wolves, Newcastle, Norwich, those are three clean sheets for Sheffield United, found out, it's really hard to predict. And often you can find yourself in a bit of a muddle. Like, I can't remember in the past when you've moved a keeper around, because, like, I moved a keeper around last year. I sold Edison and brought in Etheridge at one point, I think it was, to do some kind of financing. But I can't remember the last time you moved a keeper around outside the wildcard, Nick. I just don't think it's something you do, is it?
I think last season I was fooling around with the goalkeepers, if you remember, infamously on New Year's Eve, my Crystal Palace.
Oh, yeah.
Crystal Palace balls.
Oh, Spironi in, whoops.
Yeah. So a couple of Spironis, no, too many Spironis. But yeah,
you do it
occasionally, but he's not always the number one priority in your team, is it, at the end of the day? Unless a goalkeeper gets injured, you tend to just stick with the man you've got, unless the team is absolute dross. And we do know that Burnley are relatively solid, not most of the time, in defence, and even when they're performing poorly, Pope does pick up a few save points typically. So if we're a little bit unlucky that he did so poorly in those few game weeks, I don't think I would have been able to predict that. I was expecting more like 3-pointers from him, if I was going to be honest.
Basically expecting to match Denders. Guaita has outperformed. If we can even have the overperforming debate for goalkeepers, I think Guaita really has outperformed what we expected, especially when the fact that went down to 10 men. And you could have covered him with Kelly if I was smart enough to play him as first bench. So there's lots of different ways to look at it. I think it really does depend on your situation with keepers. My position hasn't changed too much because, I mean, I did get 2 9-pointers in a row from Pope before the most recent terrible run. Maybe I should have doubled down. Maybe keepers can be in form and still provide us points. But maybe with Guaita as well, I'd be looking at that 5.0 price tag and thinking, I can make money out of that. I can use that. I can destroy that cash cow. So I'm still on the fence, despite the fact the evidence is pointing in the direction that I probably should have made the move. Right, moving forward, the Nits, transfers and captains. Just found out this week you needed 53 points to get into the Fantasy Football Cup. So I think it looks like we've both just about made it. So we're both going to have some dead team in a couple of game weeks' time on our Fantasy Football the rest of the season. What transfer are you looking to make? And I guess it's between Vardy and Mane, isn't it, this week? It's a very, very tough choice.
Vardy's going to be the captain this game week. It seems like the sensible pick. So I've had a bit of a disaster with my captains relatively recently up until game week 16. And I realised it was because I had captained 5 different players in 5 different game weeks. And it just wasn't working out. I was missing the holes, never picking up the right player. So I thought, you know what, actually, over this period, I'm just going to stick it on Vardy and just keep it on this guy, because he's just absolutely smashing it, if we're going to be honest. Beyond all expectations, sort of 16 goals now he's got to his name, which is frankly ridiculous. And his run of form is just absolutely immense. He's had 11 goals now in 8 games, and scored in every single one of those games as well, which is just incredible. And he's got Norwich at home up next, so yeah, I think it's got to be Vardy, hasn't it, for the captaincy. But in terms of transfers, I'm possibly going to sell Tomori, and apparently he's actually yellow flagged now. So there's a few questions about what was going on with Tomori and whether he'd been dropped. And looks like he had been dropped to sort of the Christensen-Zuma defence, but then they played so terribly as well that maybe tomorrow he's going to come back into the team. But I was considering selling him, so perhaps that will be my move. The man I was actually thinking about bringing in, which I was thinking about before he hauled, was George Bulldog of Sheffield United. And Bulldog then picked up a 14-pointer, which is a bit frustrating because I wanted to catch that haul as opposed to miss it. Perhaps Tomori to Bulldog. Perhaps I'll just roll it and save it. So I've got two free transfers for the Liver Black, which is probably looking more likely at the moment. What about yourself?
Yeah, no, I think that definitely makes sense for you to roll that. I don't know whether I'll be rushing in Bulldog at the moment. Obviously, you scored and looking very, very good. You've still got Lindstrom, and Sheffield United seem to, at the moment, be on a period where they're letting in one or two of the big chances, infuriatingly not Cantwell's big chance, which is well saved by Dean Henderson, I think the 83rd minute or so. But yeah, I think to move on to my team, the captain's got to be Vardy, hasn't it? 16 goals. He's 5 ahead of Tammy Abraham and Aubameyang in the Golden Boot at the moment. And I think that going forward, he's going to be looking to absolutely smash his previous best. So the previous best was 24 goals in the Premier League winning season. He's got 16 in 16 games. So just 8 off what he got in that winning season. Yeah, you'd be back him, wouldn't you, to do it at the moment? He just looks so on it. Against Aston Villa, the first goal, when he fluffed it, any other striker would have panicked, I think. Like, imagine if that kind of fell to Wesley at the other end, like he'd have smashed it into Rose Ed. But Vardy took another touch, took it inside, tapped it in, calm as you like. Brilliant. He's the captain for Norwich because I think that Mane is going to be playing against RB Salzburg. It's very close between those two, but I think you've got to just go with Vardy at the moment. It's gotten to the point, I think, where a Vardy captain not quite working out is going to punish you this week. A lot of people with Ali, with Son captain, myself, I was regressing it on Saturday, as I mentioned very, very early on top of the pod, but Vardy came through and smashed it. So yeah, it's got to be Vardy. Transfers wise, I've removed Chilwell for Rico already, so I'm now operating with 3 very, very cheap players. It's just what I do next. So Nick, your advice please. I've got 2 choices. One is that I remove Jimenez for Rashford. The problem is that I was at a gig on Saturday night with our friend Rob in Brighton watching the National, and by the time I got home the price change has already happened. At that point I could have afforded Rico and Rashford on a free transfer in for Jimenez and Chilwell. But my phone was on life support because I had to keep it alive, basically, to pay the Uber to get me home. So I missed out on that. It means I've got to take a -4 to bring in Rashford. That's likely to be Cantwell out for Hayden. Yeah, that's what the -4 will be. The other way to look at it is I just put basically try to Riker. So you know how you went with Madison initially to try to Riker Vardy? Yeah, I go with Martial to try to Riker Rashford. Martial has been terrible for me over the past kind of few seasons, but could this be the time? Could I be timing it right? He'd come in for Zaha for me. Cash on 0.0 and run. I could leave it, I suppose. But I feel like it might be worth bringing in Man United's number 9. And 6% ownership, so that seems like quite a nice way to do it. What do you reckon?
Told you that I'm more of the fan of the Martial move at the moment. I quite like
interesting.
Quite like that pick. I think he did look really good actually in the game against City. You could cover Manchester United because I'm just not a fan of you selling Jimenez. I've said that to you as well. I don't really understand why he's being sold at the moment. I can't really get my head around it. I know they've got sort of a relatively tough run of fixtures, but you surely want him in game week 18 for that Norwich match, and you can think about selling him for Rashford if you still can after that, perhaps. So I think for now you could probably cover Rashford with Martial, and that's what I would be suggesting you do, to be honest. I think that's kind of where I'm leaning right now. I think I don't like the -4 aspect of the move either. I feel like it's going to cost you a little bit, and I'm not sure if Rashford will outscore Jimenez by more than 4 points over the next couple of games.
Yeah,
compared to what Martial will do to Zaha. So, and then also talking about losing Cantwell, who would be another player that you're probably going to be wanting in game week 18, especially over what Isaac Hayden will offer you, which is Ethel. So, that's where I'm kind of leaning at the moment on that particular move, Tom. So, you know, I don't want you to you know, you take my advice and then abuse me. I get some returns.
No, this ain't no Paris situation, Nick. But I guess I know what you mean. It's just bringing in Martial, I think, because we've done this for so long, it's got the stink of it that in a few weeks' time, I'll be sitting here saying, I should have brought in Rashford, I should have brought in the talisman. So the counterpoint is you need to abide by talisman theory. Like, Martial hasn't quite got there over the last couple of seasons. I mean, who knows? Could be a season, but he's really, really lazy. So it could be the case that I'm bringing him this week. As you can probably guess, I'm just not really taking him by Zaha. I could leave, actually, and just sort it all out the week after, take a punt, maybe fully would add on to Richarlison. But I'm just getting the feeling that Rashford's going to be so highly owned by the end of this week that either going with the talisman or going with the Rijkaard and hoping for the best is going to work. It's just the past examples like Madison for you have just put me off it altogether. All right, so that's your lot this week. Just say we are Who Got The Assist. You can find us on Twitter at @WGCA_FBL. You can find Nick at @WGCA_Nick. Listen and subscribe across the podding spectrum.
Yep, and if you want to join our league, the league code is EIKX03. There's also a theme every week to each pod. And we'll be back next week and look forward to seeing all you coming along on Friday.
Yeah, absolutely. It should be an absolutely amazing time. But in the meantime, I hope to assist you and we'll speak to you very, very soon. It's a good night from me. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.